You're listening to Boat Radio. I'm Mike McDowell, and this is The Life Aquatic. Well, this is part two of my interview with Regina and Alan, who, along with their children, Kaylee, Lily and Anna, were shipwrecked within days of leaving Florida on what was to be a circumnavigation of the globe. En route to Guatemala, they were beached in Mexico, not far from Cancun, and ended up losing their home and losing almost all of their belongings.
This was one of the most horrifying, scary experiences I've ever had in my entire life, okay? We lost almost everything that we owned.
I was going to say, yeah, when the people came and robbed her, they took everything of value and everything else. They piled up in the middle of the boat and left all the hatches and everything open.
Yeah.
And with the storms, it pretty much completely destroyed everything.
Yeah.
So we literally were left with the stuff that we had packed up and taken with us is what we had left from it.
Yeah, we could actually quite comfortably carry everything that we owned.
The five of us, I believe we had four bags.
Yep. You know, we lost stuff like, I had tools that had been in the family for about a century, okay? I had tools that I'd owned for 20 years that were very important to me. I had tools that I'd made. There were a lot of things on that boat that were really, really important and really, really, really hard to lose.
Like the kids' stuff, kids' pictures, kids' games, kids' sketchbooks and drawing, doodle pads and things like that, right?
Oh, yeah.
Everything.
Yeah, I lost my entire art portfolio, everything I ever drawn.
All Kaylee's art.
I had a number of out-of-print, hard-to-find books on a variety of subjects, and they're gone. You know, and all that hurt. But coming out the other end, landing in Guatemala, honestly, it was the most liberating experience in total that I have ever had.
Yeah.
It was a fresh start on everything. It was a chance to be very intentional about what I add to my life and what I'm going to carry with me. I've never felt so light on my feet.
I mean, it took a little bit of time still for the processing and everything. But yeah, when we were in Guatemala, we went through what I can only think of as almost a time of enlightenment after all of that. Like once we'd processed all the bad that happened and how there's nothing that we could do about it at this point, except for accept that it had happened, knowing that we had to move forward from that point. And especially when we first got there, like, we literally could, you know, pack up a backpack and we could have done anything because we could pack all of the possessions that we owned in the world into a couple of backpacks and we could have gone.
Yeah.
It's extraordinary to listen to you talk about this because some families would have been absolutely devastated by this. They would have given up. They would have gone back to America, to Key West or wherever to family homes in whichever state you're from. I mean,
we had a lot of people online that there were several of them that were suggesting it. You know, Maybe this is a sign you shouldn't be doing it. Go home. And meanwhile, we were looking at it as, well, it was really, really hard. And honestly, like when I went through everything and when we were still in Mexico, I told Alan, you know, very clearly, I didn't know if I was going to be able to continue on with the trip, that we weren't going to really know until we got to Guatemala and got on to Bill's boat, because I didn't know if, you know, when we got onto the boat, if it was going to start me with panic attacks, because I'm a very anxiety prone person. So finding out that, you know, that me or the children have like PTSD from this, have post-traumatic stress disorder from it, it wouldn't have surprised me, but we actually, it kind of for us almost, you know, at least for me, almost went the other direction. And it's actually given me a lot more focus. It's gotten me a lot more determined to do this, because now that I'm free of all of that extra stuff that I was always worried about, because we were worried about having to leave our boat on the hard for an unknown amount of time. You know, what's going to happen to it? And now all of a sudden, we don't have any of those worries. And we can really just throw ourselves into this trip, because right now this trip is all we have.
It's amazing. You talk about, so, I know you mentioned on your blog, on your website, that you have anxiety problems and agoraphobia and various other things like that. But as it turns out, you've faced death, you've lost your home, you've had the most extraordinarily stressful experience, and you dealt with it, you handled it. So actually, Regina, you are able to cope with more stress than pretty much anyone I've met or spoken to. So the idea that you think you have anxiety issues, it just seems crazy.
I think that my having anxiety to some degree, we joke about it all the time. It's like, if there's a zombie apocalypse, I'll be fine, because I'm used to living with that stress on a daily basis. So if something very stressful happens, it's all about the same level. I don't really get much more stress from it. But for me, going through the shipwreck was honestly only slightly more stressful than like going to the grocery store.
Yeah.
They're about as stressful for me. So it's kind of like, on one hand, it's fabulous. Ooh, as far as nasty stuff.
Or a party with a bunch of people you
don't know. Oh, parties with people. Let's not even talk about it. I'll have a panic attack now. It'll be bad.
This is a remarkable story. My name is Mike McDowell. You are listening to Boat Radio, and the program is The Life Aquatic. I'm talking to Regina and Alan. Their website is krakenkist.com, and their voyage is the Kraken Kissed Adventure, and you can look at videos and read all about it online on their fantastic website. So, shipwreck, stranded in Mexico, not quite stranded. You make your way to Cancun, then onto Isla Mujeres, and then you continue the journey, and you're on the way to meet Bill in Guatemala, where I think there's a little bit of work still needs to be done to his boat just to prepare it for the circumnavigation, and then you're off. So, Regina, tell us about Bill's boat, because we're talking about some pretty substantial tank, aren't we?
Oh, I was about to say, Bill's boat, I was about to say, he's actually sitting not too far away from us, so he's probably going to glance over here and look at me while I'm talking about his boat. But his boat is this beautiful 56-foot yacht that is honestly more luxury than I've ever had in any boat that we've ever lived in. With refrigeration, there's, you know, if it gets too hot, there's air conditioning. It's just, it's amazing.
He's a playboy multimillionaire with this luxury vessel?
No playboy. He worked for in the textile industry for a long time and retired. And this boat, he's been a sailor his whole life. And if there's anybody who's really responsible for me being a sailor, it would be him. You know, it was his boat when I was, you know, younger than first grade that first introduced me to boats. So the second Summit is a 56-foot Challenger. Mm-hmm. She's the only 56-foot Challenger in existence. The owner of Challenger Yachts and the designer of the boat built this one for himself as a 50-footer. And I want to say 1974 in California. And he owned it for a few years. He sold it to an Argentinian couple. They had it for about a decade. He bought it back from them, took it to Florida, and added 6 feet at the stern. You know, changed the interior configuration back there a little bit. But then he owned it until he died. And he would go racing on the boat all the time. And he'd usually take a crew of 11 with him when he went racing.
Really? I didn't know that.
Yeah. Huh. And then he died, and the boat sat out back of his property for a couple of years being neglected. It sank at the dock just enough to flood the engine room. They replaced the engine and the genset and put it on the market.
They put it on eBay. We actually saw it while it was on eBay, and it's like, ooh, if we could get a boat like that, that's a nice boat.
Yeah.
And but it was, you know, out of our price range, and in all honesty, not really a good fit for us.
Yeah.
But we ended up getting a call shortly thereafter, like after the sale had finished, and it was Bill telling us about how he had just bought this boat off of eBay. It's like, really, we're keeping an eye on eBay. Which boat was it?
Yeah.
And he's like, it's the 56-foot Challenger. I'm like, and we're sitting there going, oh my goodness, that's one of the ones we were looking at.
Yeah. And then it was about a year and a half long process to get the boat ready to sail. And I helped sail it down to Guatemala with him. That was a 5-day trip. We got into Guatemala, and he found a local shipwright that he wanted to work with. And 3 years later, the boat was done, quote unquote. They replaced 90% of the interior with very slight, subtle changes. They modified the length of a bed and stuff like that. Really beautiful job.
Oh, you definitely.
And a bunch of systems work got done and all that, and you know, new rigging and such. And the boat now, it's pretty together. I'm gonna say
three staterooms.
Yeah, three staterooms.
A separate engine room, two heads.
Two full heads.
Yeah.
She's got
one with a bathtub, one with the shower. Well, the shower is like in the main area. It's not a separate shower.
Yeah, but it's a big shower.
But yeah. Yeah. That space is pretty big.
Three separate air conditioning systems, refrigeration, a freezer.
Salon big enough for us to dance in.
Only when the table's down.
Okay, when the table's down, we could dance in the salon.
She's fast too. She sails like a witch. You know, from the waterline down, really, it's the designer copied the work of Olin Stevens. It's got a very traditional bottom on her. She's got a full keel with a whole lot of drag, you know, so she slopes down to full depth. She draws 7.5 feet.
So she's a deep boat.
She's deep. She's heavy. We've had her up over 12 knots on my 40th birthday. Winds were 18 to 20 knots right on the beam, and we had a good long swell, probably around 15 feet. On the beam as well, and we were screeching along at like 12.2, something like that. It's the fastest I've ever seen the boat go. She's a freight train. You get her going, and she doesn't want to slow down. You know, the captain likes to sail at about 7 knots at the most. Doesn't like to really be hard on the boat and go much faster than that. So it's, you know, when we're cruising and we're going on a passage, it's generally about reefing the boat down to slow her down enough to go 7 knots or less. She wants to go 9. She always wants to go 9. And she'll blast through a sea, and she'll just track straight. I mean, when we sailed her north from Guatemala, the autopilot wasn't working. And whenever I was on watch, I would take about 5 minutes to talk to her, that is the boat. Then I wouldn't touch the wheel for 45 minutes. And she'd just oscillate in a 5-degree spot on the compass. And go. She's a joy to sail.
We should mention to anyone who doesn't know, Olin Stevens, a really very, very famous American yacht designer of the 20th century. I'm not sure when he passed away, but he was born before the First World War, and he famously, I think I'm right in saying, people need to Google the history of the America's Cup, but I think that he designed 6 America's Cup winners. I mean, I think he's pretty much, I think he pretty much was the designer of the fastest yachts on the planet, right?
Yeah, as well as some of the most beautiful. To me, his pinnacle work was Stormy Weather, which was actually, I think, his second professional design job. But just, you know, fast and stunningly beautiful.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, you look at an Olin Stevens boat, and if you want to change something about it, well, you're wrong. You know?
No, I would agree with you there. And I think Intrepid and Weatherly, and there are a number of some of the most famous sailing boats in the history of sailing boats, I guess. So
that's what our underbody looks like.
Wow, fantastic. Regina, I always ask this question of my guests on the Life Aquatic, because so many people want to know how to do this. How do you do this? How do you quit the rat race and head off on an adventure around the world with your kids? How do you do it? And not, they don't mean like, how do you do it in sort of logistical, practical terms. They mean, how do you afford to do it? So we should just confirm now that you guys aren't lottery winners and you're not multi-millionaires. But, I mean, are you sort of fairly wealthy people or?
Us, no. Yeah. I was about to say, is like Alan and I, no, We're definitely not.
When we got to Guatemala, our net worth was around negative $5,000.
Yeah, I was about to say, we literally had what we had on us.
Now, our entire lifestyle, you know, how did we leave the rat race? Okay, when I was 33, I quit the longest running career that I had ever had, and we went to Florida to move onto a boat we had just bought.
That's when you were 33, and you had Kaylee then.
Yeah, we had Kaylee and we had Lily. We had them both. And we were living in Philadelphia. I had been working in the nightclub industry for years, and I'd kind of lost my temperament for it. And
you know, and things, it wasn't good for you.
Yeah,
honestly.
And things came together, and we bought a West Sail down in Florida, and we went and moved on to it. And you know,
went down there, and he started working on a schooner. And in all honesty,
I got the lowest paying job that I ever had.
However, he was so happy. Like, he'd come home frustrated still, but it was frustration, like, about how the company wasn't taking care of the boat in what he considered, you know,
the proper way,
because she deserved so much more. I mean, those were the frustrations, but as far as it was, you know, taking any kind of pay cut or anything was worth it, because, you know, and I've been a stay-at-home mom since the kids were born.
Yeah.
So, I mean, we went down to, you know, we were always been on, you know, pretty much one income, but it dropped way down.
Yeah.
But it was worth it, because all of a sudden, instead of feeling like we had to spend money just to spend time together and to do things because we were so all in all miserable with things, we were just so happy with our lives and that we were going on this adventure that it really didn't cost us much at all.
Yeah. Like, you know, what do you really want? Do you really want to have $5 lattes three times a day, you know, and drive a fancy car and wear fancy clothes? Or do you want to go and do stuff?
And if it's about figuring out what it is that you want, we wanted adventure.
Do you still have a house or an apartment or anything somewhere in the U.S.?
No.
No, nothing.
We only lived on our, like, we were full-time liveaboards. Our boat was our home. It stored all of our stuff. It was...
It was everything.
Our everything.
Yeah. Yeah, we didn't have any storage or you know, no storage.
I was
lockers,
about to say,
no
I think at, like, at my mom's house, I've got, like, a couple of things stored from my childhood, but that's really about it.
But as far as, like, you know, how this trip gets paid for, okay, here's the deal, okay? We are the crew on the boat. I handle all the maintenance on the boat that I possibly can and generally deal with any professionals that we hire.
Right now,
we stand, you know, all the watches, and if the captain wants to take the helm for a little bit, he will, and if he doesn't, then he won't. You know, I mean, that's the deal. And in exchange, he's paying our expenses. Honestly, we probably wouldn't spend a whole lot of time in Roatan if we were on our boat, as everything's very expensive here. It's about twice the cost of the Rio in Guatemala.
So let's pick up the story again. The voyage, you met Bill in Guatemala. You've sailed over to Roatan, and I'm presuming that you're sitting out hurricane season in Roatan.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, okay. And when do you think you're going to get moving again? And where will you go next? I mean, I'm presuming Nicaragua, Costa Rica, Panama, and then through the Panama Canal, or do you have...
That's the plan.
Other idea. Have you got your eye on Cape Horn?
Actually, I think we're going pretty much from here straight to Panama.
We might stop in the San Blas.
Well, which
but,
is still
but yeah,
Panama.
We're going to Panama. From Panama, it's the Galapagos.
Well, obviously through the canal.
Yeah.
And then the Galapagos down to Easter Island. And then we start our way back up north. We're going to be going to Pitcairn Island, which is famous from Mutiny on the Bounty. And then we start heading into French Polynesia, the Marquesas and whatnot.
You know more about that than I do.
Yeah, I was about to say, I'm so excited about the South Pacific. I'm the one that's been starting to study up on it.
Before we do anything, Regina, I've got to ask you then, in that case, having done all this research, which places are on your must-see list?
For me, like... Rapa Nui, because I think to some degree, because it's someplace that I wasn't really expecting to go, because, you know, when my father-in-law, even when he brought it up, it's kind of like, okay, well, being able to do the Panama and then across, but it's like, okay, but Easter Island is so far out of the way. It's like a 2 or 3 week trip out of the way just to be able to get there. And it's like, I really, really want to go see it because it's such a remote, amazing place. And it's something that a place that you watch about, like, on Discovery Channel. Yeah. You know, it's not some place that's almost, like, real for me. And knowing, like, we ended up having a lunch meeting when we were still in Key West. Bill was living in Venice, Florida, so he drove down. And we ended up having this meeting about, like, because he was bringing one of our daughters back to us after a summer. And he specifically said that he, you know, one of the things he wanted to do was Easter Island. So I was, like, beside myself, because if we do Easter Island, that also includes Pitcairn, because, you know, that's actually going to be along our way, being able to get up to French Polynesia. Other, you know, so those two are really, really big on my list of wanting to see. Like Bora Bora, I want to see Tahiti, you know, just, you know, places that you think of. And I know that those are the ones that right now I think about, and it's like, oh yeah, definitely want to see those, because those are the ones that you hear about the most. And you're like, when you think like the South Pacific, you know, those are the ones that first pop to mind. But I also know that, like, at the end of this, there's a 99.9% chance that those are probably actually going to be my least favorites.
Yep.
Because those are going to be, like, the most touristy of everywhere we go.
Yep.
And I'm sure it's going to be some little islands that I don't even know of yet and that I can't even pronounce the name of that are actually probably going to be my favorites at the end of all this.
And me, I don't care. I'm just along
for the sale. For me, it's about the traveling and exploring, whereas for him, it's about the sailing.
It's not even so much that it's about the sailing. I mean, really, the real deal is that at sea, generally, is the only time that I ever really feel like I'm me. I love being at sea. It's nerve-wracking. It's anxiety-generating. But it's home, you know?
And it's also peaceful and spiritual. And
well, and you know the rules. I mean, you know, Mother Nature can be a very violent, deadly thing, but she's fair. You know, she's fair. And
she keeps a blind eye on everything.
Yeah.
She hits every, you know, she'll whack anyone.
She kills anybody indiscriminately just because, you know.
And she's also kind to everyone indiscriminately.
Yeah.
Because that's the mood she's in.
Right, you know, and, you know, so it's the one place in the world where things make sense, you know. That's what it's all about for me. All that and being on a boat that I can hear, that I can talk to. You know, I've sailed some of the modern plastic fantastics, and I don't care for them. They don't talk. They don't really have a soul. You know.
Well, you say that. We've never really had one, though, that you got to know well enough to.
It's true.
So maybe they're just quieter about it. Who knows?
Well, I don't like quiet.
Well, then you pick the right family.
Yeah.
We're loud.
I picked the right wife, anyway.
Hey, you'd be nice.
Regina and Alan, thank you so much. It's been amazing to talk to you. You've had such, well, fantastic experiences, terrible experiences. You've run the entire, you know, the whole spectrum of emotions in the last several months. And it's great. Yeah, and it's really, really interesting and enlightening to hear about it. And yeah, it's been a real privilege to talk to you. Thank you both very much for talking to Boat Radio.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you.